You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
General election. Now, we've got a very political figure here on The One joining me to talk all about that, about their visit down here, about how to get students engaged in politics, and as well as that, the government's new gas terminal, which they're putting in place. We have the Greens Party co-leader, Chloe Swarbrick, here joining us for a corridor now. Good morning to you. How are we?
Morning. I'm great. Always a good touch of being in there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great wee spot.
I'm a big fan. I actually did an interview with Mike Houlihan like maybe 7 years ago, back when I was first a baby MP, and he was asking me what I thought of Otapoti, and I was like, it's my second favourite city.
Oh, damn.
No shade, but you know, I am the MP for Auckland Central.
Okay. At least Wellington isn't in the running. That's
good. Exactly.
At the very least.
No, there's something very, very special about this city, be that the culture, the kind of music that flows from it, the fashion, the fact that there's also this DIY element of people just making cool things happen. It might be a factor of being at the bottom of the South Island and it being so cold.
Totally.
It also means you guys face a lot of your own particular manifestations of the challenges.
Completely.
The housing crisis and otherwise.
I'm pretty sure Shane Carter or David Kilgore, one of the two, said that, you know, the reason the city made so much good music in the 80s, 90s is because it was just, you know, cold, dark, weird, industrial, kind of poor.
Yeah. And perfect for breeding ground for punk. Right?
Exactly. You're kind of a big figure in New Zealand, well, not New Zealand music, but you're a big fan of New Zealand music, I should say. I think I saw a video of you last year opening a Geneva AM gig. What is your favourite New Zealand music of 2025?
Oh my god, there's so much great music that was released last year. So, I mean, Mars, Blame It On The Weather, I think was really pertinent, and that's not only because there's a sample from me from an interview during the Auckland anniversary floods in there, but yeah, it's just this incredible synthesis of, you know, this emergent renaissance of te reo Māori and music, but also, you know, singing through and bringing to life some of the frustration around how we're treating Papatūānuku, but it's also just a banger of an album.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we can necessarily call it New Zealand music, but she does live here now. Georgia Knight's Beanpole.
Oh yeah, I love that record. Album. Beautiful album.
Moko Mokai, I love those boys. I think obviously Marlon and Commie's album as well would be up there, especially in terms of the te reo emergence, and also a banger of an album. What else is there? I mean, Verm released a great album. Greco also put out some good music. Dick Move.
Yeah.
Dream Believer Chief. There's a great song about a bus.
Yeah.
Public
An ode to K Road and that.
Exactly.
Album.
So, I think, those would be some of the top.
Mm. It's funny you mentioned Mars, Blame It On The Weather, because we've been having a lot of bad weather around the country recently.
It's almost like we're in the middle of a climate crisis.
Something like that. I think I saw someone post a video saying that we've exceeded our amount of emergencies that we can declare, which is cooked. It's only 2 months into the year.
Yeah.
And that's already the situation.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is why, you know, over the last 2 years, I've become increasingly frustrated with the tenor of our parliament. Because, look, everybody agrees that, of course, different politicians and different political parties are going to have totally different views on the way that the world works. That's all good. That's normal. That's democracy. What has become increasingly evident during this term of parliament is that the truth doesn't seem to matter to this government. So we've been asking really basic questions to our Prime Minister just to try and iron out that we're actually operating on the same planet, that being his understanding that increasing climate-changing emissions results in more intense and frequent extreme weather events. And he's always sidestepped those questions. When he has decided to engage with the reality of that, he has then denied that the government actions have anything to do with the ability to mitigate those climate-changing emissions, let alone in the international context where we have the ability to hold other countries to account, and also, you know, they continually point to how they're funding flood protection while completely ignoring the reality that they cut said funding protection by three quarters, as well as billions of dollars from climate adaptation projects from the Climate Emergency Response Fund set up under the former government, which was paid for by taxing the largest polluters. Nicola Willis took that money and put it into the trickle-down tax cuts, which in turn have shredded our economic outlook and put us into this doom loop where we see 200 New Zealanders leaving the country every single day. Different decisions can be made. That's, you know, I know it's a pretty bleak outlook at the moment, but I think it's really important for people to understand that the context that we are living in right now is the consequence of political decisions that have been made in the past and to this day, and different political decisions can be made into the future. And if I can impress anything on your listeners, it's that if we leave politics to the politicians, we'll get what what we've always got. Regular people need to understand their power this election, as with all elections, as with every single goddamn day, to engage in politics to change the world around us.
I completely agree. I completely agree. I want to shift pedals a little bit and focus on this documentary that's going to be coming out about you relatively soon, because you've been on the record saying that politics is not a career for you and that politicians are kind of a means to an end, not something to glorify.
In every sense of the word, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. At the same time, there's going to be this documentary following your personal life and work life in the lead up to the 2023 election coming out sometime in the near future. Do you think there's some sort of political branding there that people should be skeptical of? I mean, is that incongruous with what you've said in the past?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and I'm grateful to be able to like deal with this in a good faith environment. So first things first,
I have Mike Hosking on the line.
I've talked to him about it before as well as Heather Duplessy Allen. But look, at the end of the day, I have no control over this thing. So several years ago when I was like 24, 25 and, you know, first getting into politics, I was approached by these documentary filmmakers who seemed like good guys who were just interested in trying to expose what happens behind the scenes. And obviously, as you allude to, I have frequently made statements about how politics is cooked and how, you know, from the inside, it's really clear that everything is made up. So I agreed to be involved in this thing on the basis that I thought that it could potentially expose what was going on and how challenging it is to make change, but also to hopefully contextualize to people that change is not an individual pursuit, albeit me being the subject of the thing. The point was to showcase that I cannot alone make that change. I obviously don't have any control over what's going on. I actually didn't know that they were applying for public funding because, again, I have no control over how the whole thing is happening. So beyond being the subject and then turning up to film things every so often just kind of has been the ball in their court. So yeah, all of these delays, again, I have nothing to do with. And yeah, it's, I don't know, it is what it is. That's these guys' jobs. And I'd say that if you've got questions for them, I'm sure they'd be happy to answer them.
Oh, I'll try and get them on the show next week. Judith Collins recently exited politics and was appointed Law Commission President by Justice Minister Paul Goldsmith with no recruitment process, election panel or competitors for the spot. You've described it as a concern for sort of cronyism. Law Professor Andrew Geddes said it's a nakedly political appointment.
Yeah, you know, he went hundies.
Does this sort of set a precedent for abusing flexible norms when it comes to appointing people within the sort of the permanent broader public service?
I want to be really clear that this is not a personal attack in any way, shape or form. This is very much pointing out the way in which this government abuses their power effectively. So yes, you are completely right insofar as, you know, there is a flexible appointment process. However, the Law Commission is a Crown entity under its enabling legislation. Crown entities per the Public Service Commission are supposed to go through a process when it comes to appointment to people to certain positions, particularly the top dog position in those entities, which looks like, for example, setting up an arm's length process, a selection panel, and interviewing multiple people for that job. When we all found out that Judith Collins was, you know, being appointed to this position, it was like, okay, cool, whatever. It's relatively common that former politicians do end up getting said positions, but you would have expected that there would have been some kind of checks and balances on the way that that process operated. So it was actually only by virtue of parliamentary written questions by my colleague and Dunedin-based List MP for the Greens, Francisco Hernandez.
I love that guy.
He's amazing.
Great guy.
Does incredible detective work on this stuff, you know, and also as Mahi back in the day for OUSA. But all of that aside, Fran did some digging to try and figure out how this appointment actually happened in the first place, because unfortunately what we're finding is that we're having to ask a lot of questions about the processes that this government is undertaking for pretty much everything that it does. And we didn't think that anything would necessarily come of it. But what we ended up discovering is that there was no independent appointment process, there was no selection panel, and nobody else was interviewed for the job. It was basically Cabinet going, cool, Judith's got it.
Want a job,
and it was actually only by virtue of us putting this question to the media that we then found out that Judith actually did take the move of recusing herself from the decision-making process, but nonetheless all of her friends and colleagues for the past few decades are the ones who appointed her to this job. Which kind of brings us back to the core point, which is, again, this is not personal, but these processes exist in order to prevent against allegations of cronyism and corruption. When those processes are bypassed, the logical conclusion is that it's probably kind of cronyism. And there is no way that you can possibly say that this appointment has occurred on merit or that somebody is the best person for the job when you literally interviewed nobody else for that job. So, yeah, it just kind of smacks of the approach that this government takes, which is they get to do whatever they want at the expense of people's faith and trust in democracy. And that's probably the reason that we're currently plummeting in the transparency rankings internationally.
It's not good. It's not a good situation at all. And this is kind of a devil's advocate sort of question.
Hit me.
But if the right wing can get away with abusing these laws and norms as they are around the world, as they are here, and the left are playing by the rules, I think eventually we're just going to see, you know, the rights of vision come to reality. Is it fair for the left to do the same thing, to abuse these flexible norms, to rush through things, to fast-track the fast-track?
Yeah. Yeah, they're bad guys, so we're going to copy everything that they're doing, but do it our way. I think that that's how you end up in a bit of a doom loop. I think that's how you end up in this race to the bottom, and I think that's part of the reason that people have, for the last 40 years, lost more and more faith and trust in politics and politicians to facilitate the kind of society and the economy that everybody deserves. So yeah, I mean, I'll be the first to acknowledge, of course, it's a really hard gig deciding to hold yourself to a higher standard than the guys who are completely comfortable lying to the public. But I also think that unless we were to hold ourselves to those standards, then, you know, what the hell is the point of everything that we do and everything that we profess? I think that integrity needs to mean something, and the political context needs to mean something at this point in human history, needs to mean something in general, baseline. So the approach that we will be taking, should we have the privilege of being in and forming government, is actually to uphold the core tenets of democracy, because I think that that's actually how you facilitate sustainable change. One of the frequent complaints that I hear from people actually all across the political spectrum is this angst that we see this pendulum swing increasingly extremely over the last, you know, few years of things have ramped up, where, you know, the baby ends up being thrown out with the bathwater when somebody new is in power or otherwise. And this is where it's critical for us to understand that in order to get sustainable long-term change, you need the buy-in of the people of this country. So I kind of come back to this really basic, perhaps earnest, perhaps naive prospect that New Zealanders are the ones who hold power, and if they are fully informed and engaged in our politics, then that's our politics and our democracy working properly. So I'm not just interested in trying to get people to believe in me or believe in the Green Party. I want New Zealanders to believe in themselves and to have a stake in our politics.
I appreciate the response. The government is trying to fast track, as I mentioned before, with a proposed liquefied natural gas terminal in Taranaki. They're trying to build it by winter next year by developing a special piece of legislation to enable them to do that. The rationale is that this could save an average household $56 a year. You know, why is this getting pushed so aggressively? What do you reckon? Do you think it's cronyism?
Yeah, there's so many threads of stupid that I could unpack in this. And like, I say that relatively flippantly, because I really do often try and engage in a like good faith perspective to try and understand where they are coming from. But no matter which way you cut it, this is really dumb. This is dumb for the climate in terms of locking us into a more carbon intensive energy network. It is dumb economically in terms of the fact that we are going to continue to, we're locking ourselves into dependency to imports of LNG from offshore, which means that we are vulnerable to supply chain shocks, but also price fluctuations. And actually it erodes our ability to build our own energy sovereignty and resilience, which we could get through renewables, which I'll get to in a moment. And on top of all of that, it increases the cost of living. So we know that there is a guaranteed extra cost almost immediately for New Zealanders all across this country for next to no guaranteed benefit. The government is placing a heck of a lot of weight on one paper from one ministry, which speaks to the potential gains in future if gas prices are to continue to remain relatively stable, which is a huge number of some assumptions sitting behind that analysis. And that's just so profoundly ironic when the government so frequently dismisses their own independent expert advice. So they had an independent expert report that they commissioned last year, which actually spoke to how this LNG terminal was a dumb idea. Same goes the Infrastructure Commission report that came out just yesterday, which actually the minister responsible has been sitting on since December last year, which also says that this LNG import terminal is silly. So even if we were, for sake of argument, to say that we want to have gas within our electricity mix and we want to use that as kind of, you know, Something when the rain's not raining and the sun's not shining, which, by the way, is the point of a diffuse distributed electricity network, whereby we are generating from multiple sources, be they geothermal or
hydro,
or from solar panels or from wind power. That's the point of having multiple different entry points or supply channels for renewable electricity. But even if we were, for sake of argument, to want to use gas, we need to acknowledge that right now there is actually gas being produced in this country. Half of it is being taken by a company called Methanex, being turned into a cheap commodity called methanol and exported offshore. Half of our gas that is produced domestically right now. That company made $70 million in the last 2 years and paid no tax while sending that money offshore to its shareholders. We simultaneously paid it as New Zealanders for the privilege of taking our gas and sending it offshore to the tune of tens of millions of dollars under a system called free allocation under the emissions trading scheme. So again, if this government was actually serious about building our resilience, and if they actually, for sake of argument, thought that gas was important for their energy mix, then they could be looking at domestic supply and an overseas company that's currently making bank using our own gas, and that New Zealanders are paying them for that privilege. It's insane.
Corporate welfare.
Yeah. So the solution is distributed renewable energy and a diversified renewable energy inputs as well.
Mm-hmm. In November 2024, we saw, you know, huge mobilisation of New Zealanders against the Treaty Principles Bill. It seemed like there was a lot of kotahitanga around then, but since then, the Pāti Māori has fallen apart. The polls reflect a sort of sordid reality for all the different parties, on the left included. Do you think that because that movement focused too much on fighting a common enemy without bridge building or having some sort of long-term vision, you know, we've sort of lost the plot a little bit? You know, what happened to all that unity and momentum?
This is something I've been thinking about a lot in the context of many challenges, not just the recent ones, but also if we just are completely honest with ourselves on the left, of the kind of circular firing squad that we've been for the past 10 or so years, right? You know, there is so frequently this appeal to people's lack of purity in absolutely, you know, every single section of their lives or their activism, which in turn means that there's this kind of internal Olympics for who gets to be the spokesperson or who gets to participate in any given movement. So this is where I think it's really important for us to kind of come back down to earth and to realize that change is not going to happen unless we are able to mobilize the masses and find our common ground. So that's where I come back to the really basic premise that I genuinely believe and so frequently see in practice, that the vast majority of New Zealanders care about each other and the planet that we live on. And that's why it's so ironic to hear the Prime Minister currently talking about fixing the basics. The basics that he's talking about is not everybody's human rights to have a house and a decent income, to put food on the table, have access to education or job opportunities or otherwise. He's talking about some esoteric neoliberal notion of the economy, which is effectively trickle down, i.e. serving corporations, which we have seen time and time again. He makes legislation for, and the Minister of Finance makes budget decisions on the basis of supporting corporate welfare over the well-being of people and planet. So if we are to move forward as the left, and if we are to, you know, come to power, we need to realize how that power actually works in a sustainable way. And this is where I disagree with some of the tactics, if I can just be so frank, with, for example, Labour over the last week, where they were attacking the LNG terminal on the basis of it being a quote-unquote tax. The reality is that tax is actually levied by every government of every stripe. The question is, who is paying that tax? Who is the burden falling on? And what are we using that revenue to create? And in the instance of this LNG terminal, you know, this tax being levied on all New Zealanders is not fair. And the kind of spending that the government is deciding to do for this LNG terminal to foster greater dependency on fossil fuels and therefore creating more carbon emissions, higher cost of living, is also really dumb. But the basic premise of a government needing to tax in order to fund infrastructure is not a bad idea. It's important. However, right now we know that the average New Zealander is paying double the effective tax rate of the wealthiest in this country, which again is not an accident, it's a consequence of successive governments making decisions to entrench an unfair tax system. So at the end of the day, what we really need to do is kind of, as you were saying in your question, is know not just what we're in opposition to, but what it is that we stand for. And this is why over the last 2 years, people will have seen the Greens not only holding the government to account and offering that critique, but also trying really, really hard to offer substantive, evidence-based, detailed solutions to the problems that we're facing. Whether that be our fiscal strategy, which shows how we can use debt constructively to actually grow our productivity and our productive capacity as an economy to build more houses and more schools and more infrastructure. Whether you're talking about our budget, where we shift the burden of tax from 91%, we lower income tax for 91% of New Zealanders by virtue of having the top 3% pay their fair share. And in turn, we can get free dental care, free GPs, and, you know, a distributed renewable electricity network. Well, we also show through our industrial strategy that we can create 40,000 good green jobs. All of these things in concert create a vision for the kind of economy and society that we can have.
Hmm. Another thing that you guys have campaigned on in the past is a three-prong package, my goodness, for rental controls, which are rent caps, rental warrant of fitness, landlord register. Would you consider adding a fourth prong to make the tenancy tribunal a bit more fierce, have a bit more teeth? Because I know people who have been through that system, doesn't always work out for them very well, not super enforceable.
Absolutely. Long story short, yes. That's my answer. More than that, though, we also need to ensure that there are adequate powers for investigation of landlords. So we know, based on some digging that I did actually under the former government when I was not our co-leader and still involved in being our renters or housing spokesperson, that it was something like 0.002% of all tenanted households were being investigated when complaints were being made. So there's also a greater need for that. But I think it's important again to understand the ecosystem of things, because giving the tenancy tribunal is critical, giving the tenancy tribunal more power is critical, but unless that is also paired with a rental warrant of fitness and a register for property managers and landlords, it's very difficult to enforce that and to prevent people from doing the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm, completely. And it was also weird that there was that website that you could track your landlord, and that was just shut down mysteriously.
Mysteriously.
It's 1%.
What are these powers?
I know. It's super scary. You're out here in Ōtepoti trying to get the rangatahi involved in politics with a talk at Pearl Diver later this evening. We will talk about climate change and housing policy with Green MP Francisco Hernandez. You'll also be walking around Tent City, I assume.
Yeah.
What's the plan for the evening at Pearl Diver?
We're just going to have a yarn, basically. I was just talking to the crew about how we do it. I'm really not a fan of over-engineering these things. Mm. Honestly, I think that for all of the time, I've now been in politics for the better part of a decade, right? And, you know,
I'm so
we
sorry.
Can come. I know, tell me about it. I'm going crazy. but the really basic thing for everybody to understand, like, I had this intuition when I first got involved that everything was made up. And having seen it from the inside, I can affirm it is absolutely made up. But the best way that we can ensure that regular people start to understand how it is made up and how they have an opportunity to help to change things is literally just conversation. Conversations change the world. Building our common ground and understanding each other helps to change the world. And part of the neoliberal project, which obviously was best kind of summarized by Margaret Thatcher in the UK back in the 1980s when she said, there's no such thing as society.
There's only a merely individual, men and women.
That economic project of neoliberalism, which has made us all compete against each other for our basic survival, in turn exhausted all of us, made us so stressed, mental health spikes, blah, 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 precarious day-to-day life, makes it really hard to come together and find our common ground and see that these issues are not individual issues, but systemic issues. Mm. So that's part of the reason that it's important for us all to go to the pub and have a yarn about politics.
Completely.
And understand our power to change the world around us. So anyone who wants to do that, come through 6 p.m. Pearl Diver tonight.
One more quick question. You mentioned systemic issues. Mm. Now, Winston Peters.
Systemic issue.
He really is. Been around far too long. There's sort of an idea floating around the media right now that he is going to be kingmaker of either Labour or National. And one of the things he's going to get is to get half a term as the Prime Minister. Do you think there's any veracity to that?
Okay. I came out of the chamber last week, so the debating chamber, onto what are called the tiles. If you've ever seen it on TV, they're literally black and white tiles. It looks like a game of chess as all the politicians roll out in and out of question time. And Winston had just spent his answers in question time set up by one of his backbenchers, we call these patsy questions, just literally ripping into the press gallery and a particular journalist who had dared to hold him accountable for a decision that he had made as Minister of Foreign Affairs. Mm-hmm. I came out onto the tiles and all of the journos were like, Chloe, what do you think of Winston's latest thing, hoping that I would give them some kind of controversial headline back, and then that would be the thing which like dominated the news for the day. And I kind of just had to go, guys, he's going to keep saying this stuff as long as you keep reporting on it. And honestly, I don't care. Winston wants us all fighting over all of this distraction nonsense. Meanwhile, the economy is falling apart. 200 New Zealanders are leaving the country every single day. We're in this doom loop whereby, you know, young people don't feel as though there's a future here. Can we maybe focus on the things that really matter? So honestly, well, I know that your question is coming from a place of good faith. I don't care. I think that Winston Peters wants us all to be talking about him, and yeah, I would prefer to be talking about the issues that actually matter, because if people can understand and get behind and that stuff, then we're in a place to actually change things.
Okay, folks. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program this morning.
Always.
I really appreciate it.
We love student media.
And we love you too. All right, thank you so much.
Cheers.
That was Green Party co-leader Chloe Swarbrick here having a chat about all things election, all things o te poti, all things politics. We're going to play some Ma. If you want to go see Chloe to tell her what you think, good or bad, head down to Pearl Diver tonight from 6 to 7. Her and Francisco Hernandez will be there. Here's Ma with Blame It on the Weather, Ka Kite.
Cyclone Gabrielle.
A national state of emergency.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.